Welcome to Hometown Highlights, where we sit down with professionals, business owners, and community members. There are so many unique and incredible stories in the individuals and businesses that surround us every day. Here on Hometown Highlights, we bring attention to these stories and bring them to the spotlight. We also want to thank our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. We appreciate their support in creating this podcast. Now, let's jump into the conversation. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hometown Highlights podcast. I'm your host today, Dom Fry, the insurance guy. Really excited for today's episode. Co-host Ryan Pestle, unfortunately, cannot be here today, so I'll be handling this episode. Really excited to be able to sit down and interview Joe Hall. Great man, fantastic story, a lot of different charity work and things that he is working with and trying to accomplish at the very moment. So really excited, to provide a platform, just to be able to kind of highlight, him and his journey and where he's at and what he is doing for his community to spread awareness in several different arenas as well. So let's welcome Joe. How are you doing this morning?
Not too bad. Can't complain.
Good to hear. So let's just jump into it. A couple basic kind of icebreaker questions just to get to know you a little bit better for individuals that may not know you personally. First question, pretty basic. We spend a lot of time on our phones and electronics. Are you an Apple or an Android user?
I'm an iPhone guy. I at one point tried to switch back because I started off Android. I was Samsung. It's like, oh, I'm not going to be that guy that goes to Apple. My sister got me on. She's like, you should try an iPhone. So I tried it and I got so used to iPhone. I went back to a gal, with the free upgrades or whatever that the providers offer. I went back to an Android and was like, no, I can't do it. It's like the next time I had a chance to upgrade, I was like, I'm going back to Apple.
Yeah. Apple just, they do a fantastic job of just making things simple. Like that's right. My opinion with Apple, that it's, if you want all these extra features and gadgets, obviously Androids can be great, but if you just want simple phone that works well, Apple knocks it out of the park.
Right.
So are you Apple everything then, or just an iPhone user? Like you have a MacBook, AirPods, the whole shebang?
I do have AirPods. My mom got them for Christmas. As far as headphones go, especially with what I'm getting ready to do, I've got quite a few pairs just in case, if I need to keep listening. I've got an AirPod or an AirPad, but I ended up donating it to my alma mater so they could use it for football on the sidelines and everything. But yeah, pretty much. It's pretty much all Apple.
That's awesome. So are you more of a morning or a night person?
This is really, this one was a tough one because it's like, I used to work third shift. So I was really into that mode of like being up at night. But my whole life up till then, I was a morning person. Like, I would be the guy that when my alarm would go off in the morning, boom, I'm up and going. So both. when I was a manager for the company that I'm still currently with years ago, I was working so much that I had to be both a morning and a night person. So it kind of drilled that into me where I would only sleep 3 or 4 hours a day. Most of the time was spent driving to work, to or from work, or at work. So my body had to adjust.
Oh my. Yeah, I mean, I can see how it get changed through different seasons of your life. That's a lot. It's at the same time you're a night person. One more question, just to know you a little better. What is something, right now you're, and we'll dive into more details later, but you're very transparent, with your journey and where you have been and where you are and where you are going. But what is something that most people do not know about you? Is there a fun fact about you, Joe?
Back in 2016, I started training to become a professional wrestler.
Okay.
It was one thing I always wanted to do. I grew up in the, I was a Hulkamaniac from the moment that I could remember as a kid. So I'd always wanted to do it. And in high school, we'd be warming up before wrestling meets and my friends and I would be pro wrestling out there. And, it was just always something I wanted to do. And I was like, I found a school in Central Ohio and I went, I paid the money. I started training. Then I got that promotion at work and I was one of those guys. And it's still something I'm working through now, whereas like work became my whole identity. So I kind of had to, I pushed that off and it's been one of my greatest regrets that I never went back and tried to finish that and at least get booked for one indie show just to do it, entertaining people and making people smile or laugh or have a good time or otherwise just get away from whatever bad might be going on in their lives has always been something I try to do. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, why not do that? So yeah, I at one point was training to be a professional wrestler.
That's fun. That's fun. So let's, I want to share the entire story for you, Joe, but for those that may not be familiar with your journey, if we can start with give me a 60-second, maybe a 2-minute summary of the haul across the country. What is it? What is your goal? And then we can kind of dive into the why and kind of the story behind it.
Haul across the country, patent pending, is a cross-country walk, a transcontinental walk by myself. It will be an unsupported walk. I won't have a road crew or anything. And the goal of the walk is to raise awareness for the mental health crisis in our country, bring awareness to suicide prevention. And I'm also raising funds for Children's Hospital here in Dayton in honor of a friend of mine whose son took his life 2 years ago, just shy of his 17th birthday. Mm. I've suffered for a long time. And I figured if this is a chance to kind of do something to bring it to light, then I was going to go for it.
Mm, that's awesome. That is really cool. So the question that I'm sure you get all the time, people always ask, and I'm going to start the podcast with it is, you mentioned there briefly, but why? Why the walk all the way across the country?
Well, when it first started out, this was back in November. We got to kind of rewind a little bit further than that. Back in September of 2020, after having been given involuntary unpaid leave from my management job, I was fired. I had been out riding my motorcycle, first motorcycle, and it had done a lot for me as far as getting out of my depression. And I had been struggling with depression since 07 or 08. Mm. But I was heading to community college to kind of restart my life, and I was going to take firefighter and EMT classes. Rode my bike 1 week, came off an exit, and I went through the back window of an SUV. I ended up with 2 pelvic fractures. I broke / dislocated / later on we found out shredded ligaments in my right wrist. I had a cracked orbital bone, and you can't tell because the plastic surgeon did a really good job, but they did about 50 to 60 stitches. That's where we stopped counting in the emergency room on my face.
Wow.
And then we later found out that I ended up tearing my labrum in my hip. And I've got a small fatty hernia that they don't want to do anything with. So when I was in the hospital, things got really bad. It got really dark for me, especially because this was prime COVID. I couldn't have people that stayed the night with me. They did allow visitors. My mom and my sister managed to drive from Gatlinburg, where they were on vacation, back to Dayton in 5 hours, including a food stop. Like one of the bystanders called her while I was on the ground. And I was like, Mom, just stay. I'm not going to die. I'll be fine. You can't tell a mom that. So like they ended their vacation and they floored it. My cousin and dad were there. They beat the ambulance to Miami Valley Hospital.
Wow.
But, once everybody was gone, for the first at least 2 to 3 nights, I laid there by myself, really unable to move because my legs and my pelvic area had swollen up so bad that I had had enough of it. I mean, I had always, my way of dealing with my issues and my depression is to make jokes about suicide, it's always like, well, I'm going to go jump in front of traffic and that's just how I kind of coped with it. But now, after all of this had happened, I laid in the hospital bed and I looked above me and I'm trying to figure out how I can reach up with one arm and wrap one of these cords around my neck and just slide down the bed and be completely done with everything. Whether it was exhaustion, a type of divine intervention, depending on your beliefs, I'm not going to delve into that. For whatever reason, I didn't go through with it. So after my surgery, which was the next day, they got me up and kind of got me sat up on the bed. And then the next day we started walking down the hospital. And I told myself, I've got to set a goal. I've got to do something. I can't just sit here and wallow because the accident's over. And I think most of us do this too much. I know I'm really bad at it, is when something goes wrong, we dwell on it. All we think about is, oh man, what could I have done different? Why did, it's not going to change it. You got to go forward and you got to be better after it. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? In 2021, I'm going to run the Air Force Marathon. So I started training for that. You know, I after about a close to 3 week stay in the hospital, and I started easing my way into walking and doing things like that. I started training for the marathon in the spring of 2021. And, you know, my goal was just to finish it, to be an actual marathon finisher. I had no dreams of qualifying for Boston. But, you know, it was like, you know, I'm going to finish a marathon. I'm going to show that like a 300 pound guy who's been through all this can do that. Well, then COVID canceled the 2021 Air Force Marathon about a month and a half, 2 months before. And I was like, great, all that work I've been doing was for nothing. So back down the hill I went. Mm. So somebody brought up, right, stumbled across the Columbus Marathon. Said, okay, we're going to do it. I had stopped training and I was basically right off the couch, but I said, we're going to do Columbus. So I went out, I finished Columbus in a blistering time of 7 hours and 15 minutes. I was the very last finisher. They had already put all the food away. That was really sad because I was hungry at the end of that thing. But at least I got my medal, which was the important part. And then, you know, and I talked to people who were actual, like, real runners. And, you know, they said, you know, after you do something like that, post-race depression is a real thing because you've taxed your body and your body is just, it kind of like, it doesn't give up, but it's like, it's exhausted. So I was like, well, I got to focus on something else. Mm-hmm. So in November of 21, about 5 weeks after that, so we're looking at just a little over a year since I had my body rebuilt like I was the $6 billion man. I was like, I'm going to go out to Phoenix and I'm going to compete in this ultra marathon, but I'm going to do it to try to raise funds for Children's Hospital for their annual like toy drive for Christmas. So I had some people, including Michelle Wolf, who is the woman who nominated, you know, let you guys know about me. So I had to give her a shout out. She donated. My goal was to have people donate per mile, but what ended up happening is just people were donating large chunks. But I set a goal. I said, you know what? Over 48 hours, I'm going to do 100 miles. Because in my mind, I'm like, well, if I can do 26 and 7 hours, then I can easily. No, my body was not happy. So I get through that ultra marathon, which is, you know, anything over 26.2. I covered 52 miles over 2 days, which was, you know, again, it wasn't what I wanted. And like at the end where I got my finisher medal, because it got around, everybody heard my story about what I was, you know, running. And we'll be very loose with what we term running. I was moving for, and one of the competitors actually, he added me on Facebook afterwards and he donated $500 himself.
Wow.
to what I was doing. So I've done these, you know, I did these two things. And again, I'm telling myself, we've got to keep going. I got to find something. But again, I had drifted back into that. I would just work. I work, come home. Because I had spent so much time like begging when I was out of work and I was hurt and couldn't really do anything, you know, between GoFundMes and having other people pay my bills, it was like overcompensating. Now I was like, I'm going to work as many hours as I can because I don't want to have to ask anybody for any help ever. But it, again, that kind of just sent me right back down the wrong path. And some stuff happened with our leadership at work where I kind of felt I was being targeted. And one night I'm scrolling on YouTube, trying to fall asleep. And a Mike Posner video shows up. It's called Live Before I Die. And the title of the song alone kind of spoke to me. It's like, wow, that's a really powerful song title. So I clicked the video. And it's about his own walk across the country in 2019. He had lost his dad the year before. Avicii, the musician, he died that same year. And they were good. He and Mike were really good friends. And so he was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. And at the beginning of the video, the text blocks come up and it says, you know, people ask why. And he said, I walked across the country to be somebody I'm actually proud of. And that also like really kind of hit me in the gut, because it's like, this is a guy who, you know, was a big pop star, you know, in the early 2010s. Like, he had hits, like he had what a lot of people would think is everything, you know. He was he was big time, and this is a guy who's not proud of any of that. And I was like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, well, you know what, if Mike Posner can do it, I can do it. And it was at that time I said, I'm going to walk across the country. And I said it originally, I was like, I'm going to leave May 22nd and I'm going to get to the Pacific on November 22nd, my 40th birthday. And then like a ray of light's going to come through the clouds and it's going to be a hard reset on my life. And I can go forward with more meaning after this or some, you know, with more purpose. So I'm waiting another couple weeks. I'm starting to plan stuff. I'm connecting with people who've made a successful transcontinental walk and I'm getting ideas and I'm starting to put my money back. But then I start thinking like, I don't know. And this is, you know, one of those other things I struggle with is like, I don't value myself enough that to see that I'm worth doing this walk. Like I would quit on me because I did. That's just who I am. That's been me for the majority of my life. I don't know if that's something that can be fixed at this point, but so I had to find something bigger, something that was going to, you know, if I get tired or, you know, my feet inevitably get really blistered and I'm just like, you know, I want to be done with this, something that won't let me quit. So I had just recently watched the movie version of Dear Evan Hansen. And I was lucky enough to catch Dear Evan Hansen when it came through Columbus a few years ago. And it really spoke to me. You know, it's a hit musical that does deal with teen suicide, trying to fit in, you know, trying to find your place. And I was talking with Sarah, the mother of Jackson, the young man who took his life. And we were comparing, you know, how it spoke to us. And that was just when, like, somebody finally screwed the light bulb in. And I said, I knew that they had had a fundraiser set up for him with Children's Hospital in his name. And I said, I'm going to walk for them. I'm going to walk for that fundraiser. I'm going to raise funds for them. And I'm going to bring awareness to the mental health crisis. I mean, we're doing a lot better as a country than we have been. But, you know, I grew up in an era, and I don't know how old you are exactly, but like when I grew up, we couldn't have emotion. You know, we were taught to bottle everything up. And a lot of people pass that down to other generations and kids nowadays, they just don't have the ability to cope when things go wrong. So we've got to do better as a society. And I figure if it takes a 315-pound medically and, you know, anatomically fixed man walking 3,000 miles to do it, then let's go. Let's do it.
Wow, that is awesome, Joe. I love hearing, you know, your story, your heart behind it. There's, I have so many different questions running through my head right now. So much to unpack there. I guess my first question, if we go back as far as more of the concrete details. So after your motorcycle accident, how long were you in the hospital for?
I was in the trauma unit for 10 days. And then I spent another week at a rehab hospital across the street, kind of learning how to get in and out of a car, get up out of bed, sit up and do things like that. So I spent a total of 17 days in the hospital, in a hospital of some sort.
Wow. That's actually much shorter than what I would have thought. You know, with all the injuries and everything that you had, I would have thought it would have been a much longer stay.
Oh, it felt a lot longer.
That's fair. Especially, I mean, at least I'm glad to hear that you said you were able to have some visitors. Obviously, yeah, with that, you know, being the fall of 2020, peak COVID, you know, hospitals have had a lot of restrictions and, you know, reasonably so. But, you know, I'm glad to hear that you were still able to have some visitors at that time. But yeah, I'm sure that it probably felt much longer. But, you know, as you're going through all the injuries and everything that you had, I'm thinking like, were you spending months in the hospital? Or, you know, so 17 days, relatively speaking, I feel like it's actually, looking back on it, probably is a little bit easier as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, cause I just recently last fall had a friend who rides a bike and he got hit by a drunk driver and he lost his leg. You compare the two incidents and it's like, you know, I'm lucky in that regard because now he can't ride a bike. He probably won't be able to ride a bike again because he's lost that leg. Now he could probably ride an automatic, but it would still, I can't remember if it was his left or right leg. But he lost half his leg and it was like, you know, we always look at things initially like it's the worst thing that could happen. And I'm not trying to downplay my friend's thing because he's been surprisingly jovial about it because he's like, no, make all the one-legged jokes you want. He's like, that makes me feel better that you're not joking about it. And I'm like, oh, man, you should not have opened that door for me. But, you know, we always in the moment, we always look at things like it's never going to get better. And especially with mental health, you know, but a lot of times it does just take persevering to find the purpose behind the suffering that you went through, you know? So I think that was big for me. I was like, and I was surprised. I was surprised that the stay was that short because of the way I felt. I mean, I have a pretty good pain tolerance. I cut off all the high level pain meds after about 3 days. And I tried to keep the nurses as unbusy with me as possible. You know, they would check in and I'm like, do you need anything? No, go check on it. Cause I hear like wailing and things like that from other rooms. I'm like, I'm fine. I'll be all right. As long as I get my 3 meals a day, you know, and when my PP bladder gets filled, as long as somebody comes to empty that, like we're good. Like I'm low maintenance.
Yes.
It's cool. But you know, it's weird. It's kind of like not an oxymoron, but it was a short stay compared to what I thought it would be, but it felt like an eternity just sitting there and not really able to do much of anything.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you're in the hospital for 17 days, approximately like a year later is when you run that marathon. You talk about being in the hospital, obviously having to like kind of relearn to walk and going through that therapy process. I guess like, what did that like 12 months look like as far as training, you know, like how much of that, like, you know, when you left the hospital, I can't imagine you were, you know, a-okay, probably still like had some limitations and such with walking. So then obviously like 12 months later to be completing an entire, you know, 26.2 miles, complete the full marathon, like what did that 12 months of training really even look like?
Well, I mean, the training really didn't start till that following spring, because I would say for at least another month out of the hospital, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, I still had to use a walker to get around.
Right.
And we helped out, a friend and I, we helped out with filming for the high school football team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was like, I got to get out and do something. So I, you know, got the walker out and limped up the bleachers to the press box so I could help out with video just to have some kind of normalcy to my life. Eventually by like mid to late November, I had gotten to a cane occasionally when I would need it, you know, long distances. But then not long after that, I was able to walk on my own. And I kind of started just working on, you know, stretching and trying to get mobility back. And then in spring, when I finally started trying to hit a track and start marathon training, it started off as a lot of like jogging and walking. I mean, I've never been a runner, but, you know, everything that I read said, this is where we need to start. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it would start off with like, I jog 50 meters, walk 50 meters. And then, you know, I would increase it a little bit. And then I would get to the point where I'd be mad that I'm not further along than I am, you know, as the months go, like it would get to, I would be like, all right, well, I'm going to run for a whole 400 meters and then I'll walk, you know, 400 or 800.
Right.
But I'd still be so frustrated because I want to be further along than I am. And like at the end of one workout, I remember, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get to this last 100 meters and I'm going to sprint. And I don't know if it was an actual anatomic thing or if it was a cognitive thing, but like my brain I didn't remember how to run, like to sprint. So it looked like a really obese baby deer trying to run the last 100 meters of this. Cause my legs just wouldn't, like I said, I don't know if it was my brain was like, we're not going to do this. Or if it was just still the tightness and kind of getting back to normal. I couldn't sprint. I felt so awkward doing it, but you know, slowly between that, I would do a lot of rucking, which is oddly enough, good preparation for what I'm about to do. But it was just about trying to keep moving. You know, I knew if I could at least keep moving at a 14 to 15 minute mile per hour pace, which for most normal human beings is like a walk, then getting through the marathon would be doable. But it, you know, it wasn't without its struggles in the marathon. I got I got real tight at a lot of points. I mean, there were times where I would like tell myself, look, walk 50, you know, jog 50 steps and then you can walk again. But yeah, it was, I never really got to a period where I would like run for like 5 or 6 miles. It was like, if I got to an 800 meter run and then had to walk, I was cool with it.
Yeah. Yep. No, I mean, that's awesome. That's inspiring to hear. And I can't, again, obviously hindsight being 2020 for you, I can't imagine just the struggle and the amount of perseverance that you had to have during that, especially if you said if you started in the spring and even before the spring as well. But just to go through that, you know, being barely walking to completing an entire marathon in, you know, 12 months is quite the accomplishment. And that's awesome. And I also really enjoyed, you know, hearing you talk about, you know, the YouTube video and being able to watch that and the inspiration. And I think that is, you know, a large aspect of the mental health, you know, crisis and such is being able to look on at other, especially in social media plays a factor in that as well. Looking on at other people and saying, well, they got it together. Their life is great. Their life, you know, and it really makes you downplay yourself then because you're struggling and you have things that you're worried about. And, you know, you mentioned with the video with Mike and him saying that walking across the country is something to be proud of. And for you, you look at him and say like, whoa, like, how are you like not proud of your life? Like, you know, you have all these things that are going on and, you know, being able to realize, take a step back and say like, he's a man too, you know, and it's good. And that is a part of the, you know, that mental health conversation. When we look at celebrities, when we look at athletes, when we look at, you know, people in the public figure, and a lot of times for people like me and you, we look on and say, yeah, like their life's perfect. What could they possibly be, you know, sad about? And, you know, it's cool now, you know, you using your platform to raise awareness for that. But like, you know, I could also be like, I could flip it and even say that's how people could look at you and say, wow, look at all he's been through and he's pushed through all this. And, you know, Joe's so awesome. And the perseverance and the determination that he has, and you're still standing right there saying like, I'm struggling with the same as you, you know, I'm walking through, you know, my own battles, and, you know, you are being an encouragement and a light to other people, which is really cool to see you use your platform in that way.
I know, you know, and like you were saying with the social media, you know, within the last, what, five to 10 years, you know, Robin Williams, Chester Bennington, mm-hmm. Anthony Bourdain, like, and then recently, you know, you have the three young ladies, you know, Katie Meyer from Stanford, you know, one of the, you know, she was a starter for a Division I college women's soccer team. The young lady from Wisconsin, the track run, cross country runner, her name mm-hmm. escapes me. And then the Burnett girl from James Madison, softball player, who was, you know, the star of their college World Series run last year, just took her own life. You know, Naomi Judd, you know, 3 or 4 days ago. Mm. Naomi? Yeah. Yeah. You know, these are people that we as normal folks, I don't want to say idolize, but we do look up to them in a lot of regards, you know?
Yes.
And you would never guess that a guy like Robin Williams, who was so funny and is smiling for sure. all the time and cracking jokes, was struggling like he is. Mm. And it's, you know, that you would think would open people's eyes, but, you know, a lot of people can't relate to that, you know, it's because we're not movie stars and things like that, you know? I mean,
but I think I think it is like opening people's eyes because you do look on and say like, yeah, like, again, they are people, they are struggling the same as me. And it, you know, it just encourages you to realize like, we're all in this together. Like, you know, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much fame, no matter how much, you know, publicity, no matter how great or perfect your life may seem, like, we're all in this together. This is all a struggle. We all, you know, deal with our separate things. And it, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, brings a sense of unity, I feel like, mm-hmm. with, you know, all people.
Right. And that's the biggest thing is like, you know, I'm sure that, you know, I know that along the line of my life, like, I've done things or said things to people that have hurt them. And it's like, especially now with everything I've been through, I look back and it's like, it was never, you know, like malintentioned or anything. Cause that's just not who I am. Obviously the things I go through in my head every day, I would never try to do something or say something to somebody if I thought it would hurt them. But like, I look back and I was like, I know I've done that at some point. How do you reconcile that? How do you use that to move forward? And that's, you know, for me, that's another thing. It's just like, well, I've got to try to bring as much positivity as I can. You know, again, you can't look back at it and take it back after you've said or done something. You know, you gotta be better. You gotta do better, and you've got to try to use whatever you have at your disposal to make even your small world around you a little bit better. Because if everybody did that, it would grow exponentially, and we could help a lot of people. You know. So that's, you know, that was ultimately kind of what I was hoping with what I'm attempting to do is, you know, give people a voice too. A lot of people don't want to talk about it, you know, because again, men there's no one certain demographic I want to point to. Men, like we talked about, they don't feel like they can talk. We're not allowed to, we were never taught to open up or anything like that. Women, mothers, they've got so much on their plate already. They don't, a lot of times don't feel like they can show that weakness. You know, they got to be strong for their kids. So they can't talk about their struggles. And again, children, they haven't, and that's all the way up through, 18 years old. They aren't developing ways to cope with the negative things in their lives. So their first instinct in a lot of ways when something goes wrong is to try to take their life. And it's, we, like I said, we just got to do better. And if me torturing myself over a 6-month period by doing this can, and because I was talking with somebody the other day, I said, if I go through all of this and it just keeps one person from harming themselves, or it pulls even one person out of whatever they're suffering from and they can improve their life, then everything that I've gone through in 3,000 miles will have been worth it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'd love to help more people, but if it's just one person, then I've done something positive for someone, and then hopefully they can pay that forward down the road and help out one more person. And then maybe it's a little bit slower build, but maybe we can all do that for everybody.
Sure. For sure. That is awesome. That is really cool to hear you and, just hear your perspective and where your heart is at. And yeah, the fact that it would be worth it all for one individual. I also enjoyed, earlier you had mentioned about, like the purpose or your why and your motivation behind it. And, the fact that you said, yeah, for yourself, I don't really, purely for yourself, you're like, do I want to walk 3,000 miles cross country? No. But then when you think of, okay, who am I doing this for? And you mentioned your, friend Sarah and her nurse son Jackson, and, just him being a motivation and his story, just in the heartbreaking story for him and his family, and being able to, walk and raise funds for, again, that mental health awareness and being that why, and, using others essentially to kind of motivate you to complete this entire walk. It's just really cool and inspiring to hear you talk about as well.
Yeah, and they just had the actual Run a Mile for Jackson event 2 weekends ago, and myself and then one of my friends from work who he bought one of our t-shirts and everything. We went out there and I didn't run it. I just walked it because I know he was actually a friend of mine was in a really bad car wreck a couple months before me. So he's also got like a new pelvis and a new hip. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, we're injury buddies. So we kind of walked it, but we went there to show support for Sarah and Sarah's mom, Karen, who, ever since I told them what I was doing, they have, they've been 100% behind it. What can we do? Cool. Karen asked, hey, when you, can I meet you and walk with you? And I'm like, absolutely. I was like, by the time I get back to Ohio, I'm going to be 600 miles into the most boring walk of my life. Like I'm going to take any, human contact I can get at that point. But she also said, when you get to the end, I want to fly out there and meet you. And that really hit me because I love my mom. I'm not downplaying it, but I know just simply from a cost aspect, she wouldn't be able to fly to San Francisco and meet me out there at the end. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is a woman who up until 2 weeks ago, I had never met. And she was, she bought one of the, I believe it was the sleeping bag for me that I'm going to use. She's like, I'm going to try to send you some money every month to help out. And I'm going to, I want to walk with you. I want to be there at the end. And it was just like, I've never met you. And you're already, it opens your eyes as to the positive effect you can have on somebody with even just the intent of doing what I'm doing, because I've had people be like, dude, this is so inspirational. I'm like, guys, haven't done anything yet. I've planned something that down the road could be inspirational. It's like, but all I've been doing so far is like working to raise money and planning, the hardest thing I've ever done physically. And that's saying a lot because I bounced back from my surgery and I did what I did in a relatively small time frame. But I was like, this is a whole different, animal. This is a walking across a continent, walking.
Yeah, the Forrest Gump style,
Right.
This is why
I've driven half this continent and I didn't enjoy any of that. And now I'm going to walk the whole thing.
Oh, Oh, that's cool. So as far as the walk itself, to kind of get into some of those details, you said that you are starting here shortly in the middle of May, correct?
Yeah, May 15th. I guess by the time this airs, I will have departed from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. I chose to start there because at one point I had thought about following the American Discovery Trail, which is the first non-motorized trail across the country. But I found a hitch in it. They want you to cross the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, and the Chesapeake Bay Bridge does not allow pedestrians. So, yeah, I mean, I could have walked around it. Yeah, but I was like, I'm still going to start there just because that's where it starts. But, you know, I've been routing, and I've got a gentleman who's volunteered to help out with at least guiding most of, you know, because there's going to be things that are happening. A bridge might be shut down, a road might be closed, and I'm going to have to detour at some point. But, yeah, I will leave May 15th from Delaware. Hopefully we've got it routed to where I'll come back through home, you know, by mid-June. And then hopefully again, by my 40th birthday, I will hit the Pacific Ocean at Ocean Beach in San Francisco. And maybe by then I will have gained enough notoriety that my 49ers will bestow upon me a ticket to a home game, because that would be awesome. But, you know, so yeah, that's the tentative plan. Again, you know, if weather holds me back, because I will be walking through the Midwest at the peak of tornado season, phenomenal planning by me, you know, and, you know, given my history, you know, with injuries, I don't want to have the self-fulfilling prophecy of guessing that I'm going to get injured at some point, but I, you know, if it happens, it's going to slow me down. So that might add miles, because I might have to detour south around the Rockies just to stay in a more temperate environment to finish the walk. But, you know, I've told people, you know, even my mom, who initially was very skeptical. She didn't think I was really serious about this. And, you know, lately with the last couple weeks coming up and the departure date getting closer, she's like, ah, crap, he's really going to do this. I told her, and I told a lot of other people, I said, this only ends one of three ways for me. I was like, this is going to end with me in the Pacific Ocean, celebrating the finish. It's going to end in a hospital room, or it's going to end the other way. There is no, the only reason I would come back or would be if someone passed away. And then at that point, I would go right back to, just like Mike Posner did, because he was bitten by a rattlesnake on his crossing and had in Colorado, a baby rattlesnake. And they had to send one person on his crew like miles down the road to get cell phone reception. And they flew him to a hospital, and he spent, I think it was about 6 weeks recovering. They thought he was either going to die or lose his leg, but he managed to survive. He got better. He flew right back to the spot where he got bit, and he finished his walk. That would be the only way that this doesn't end with me in the Pacific Ocean. I mean, I hate to bring the Debbie Downer aspect, but like I said, it was ocean, hospital, or a box. Like, this is going to happen. You know, I'm going to do this.
Yep.
And my mom's like, well, I don't think like that. I'm like, I'm not thinking like that. I'm just letting you know that this is where I'm at with how dedicated I am to finishing this.
Yeah.
And it, for me, it's like, it's one of the first things in my life that I've said, I've dabbled a lot. Like, I did mixed martial arts for a while, and I never fully committed. I banked on being a pretty good wrestler, but like, I never lifted. I never did a lot of cardio. I would go to the gym 3 or 4 days a week, you know, get a fight booked, go fight, you know. Now, I'm not saying that I'd be in the UFC with a belt around my waist and have millions of beautiful women wanting me, but I never pursued it. Like, I never went all in with it. And I started looking back, and I was like, man, you've never really went all in with anything that you've done. I don't know if it was a thing where I was like, I was nervous. Like, well, what if I raise the expectation and then I don't meet it, then I'm going to feel worse. Or if I, you know, I don't know what it was that caused me to never really buy in. I'm sure a therapist would be able to tell me that, but I, you know, that stuff's expensive too. So I was like, when I made this a plan, I said this, you know, like I said, I've read 4 or 5 books from people who've successfully made crossings. I've connected online, whether it be Facebook or just sending emails out to people who have done this, just picking brains. I said, I'm going to try to assume or assimilate as much knowledge as I can so I can make my walk the best walk it can be for me. No two walks are ever going to be the same. Obviously, you know, everybody's physically different. They've got a different purpose behind it. Like right now, I won't call him a colleague, but a person I've engaged in conversation with online, Greg Nance, he's actually running. He left New York a couple of weeks ago, and he's running the northern route across the country because he lives in Washington. And I think tomorrow, because I talked about driving up to meet him to have dinner with him, I think tomorrow they're scheduled to be in Cleveland. And then because he was in Pittsburgh yesterday, but he's running across the country.
Wow.
But he's also got like a crew and a truck, and he's way better funded with his foundation than I am. I'm like, hey, anyone want to donate $5? I'd appreciate it. But, you know, Greg is also running for youth mental health, too. So I'm going to give a shout out to Greg Nance and the Run Far Foundation. Check them out as well, because his focus is youth mental health. But and he's, you know, this between the foundation and everything for him, he's like, this is the culmination of like a decade of preparation. And I was like, 6 months, give or take, you know. So but he's been really good about, you know, engaging with me, not since the run started, because obviously like he's focusing on, you know, A to B, let's get through the run.
Right.
But like, you know, he was very encouraging about it. And he's like real supportive, which means a lot to me, because this is one of those people that we talk about. Like he's got a lot of followers on Instagram, you know what I mean? And Facebook mm-hmm. and things like that. Like when he gets done, you know, his foundation and what I'm running for are combining to do something big. Granted, I've got like a very small fraction of the amount of people right now that are following me, but you know, it's fun to see other people doing the same thing, even if he's doing it a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That is awesome. And cool that, you know, you have other individuals that you can talk to that are, again, going through similar experiences and just being able to, you know, read those books, being educated beforehand. Cause I'm sure, you know, you said you've been preparing for this for obviously quite a while, but I'm sure you probably have to have every single aspect pretty well detailed. Not that there won't be detours and such, but you know, as far as how many miles you're walking a day, where you're going to stay at, what's the, you know, food, nutrition, and, you know, all of that, I'm sure it has to be very well documented and very well planned out ahead of time,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And for most of the journey, it shouldn't be bad because, you know, the eastern two-thirds of the country, you can go 15 or 20 miles and hit a town of some sort.
Right.
The only point that for me that's going to get dicey is when I get to the Rockies and you go west. Mm. Then you get to Utah, Nevada, you get to the desert. At that point, I may pick up a stroller just to carry more water and more, you know, more food just in case, because there are times, depending on the route you go, you could go 100 miles in between supplies.
Yeah.
So even if by that point I'm doing 25 miles a day, that's still 4 days worth of walking to get to supplies. So, yeah. But my goal is to backpack the entire thing. And I know that it's going to be relatively temperate for most, you know, for the first part of the journey. So I want to carry as much water as I will when I get to that point. But also, I'm assuming that by the time I'm 2,000 miles into this, that I will have lost some weight. So then I can offset that, even if I'm still backpacking, by carrying a couple more gallons of water. If I lose 25 pounds, that's 3 extra gallons that I could carry in my pack. Mm. And it won't really be adding weight because I started at, you know, 315 or so where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Cool. So there, you know, as you mentioned earlier, yeah, by the time this episode airs, you'll have started the walk in Delaware. So are you, throughout the trip, will you be documenting this somewhere? Like, do you have a blog? Will it be like a vlog, a video series, a website? Is there somewhere that you will be documenting, like throughout the social media platforms or anything like that?
Yeah, it's I say we, because I've got a friend that's running our website. I got a couple other guys who, you know, one is a really good salesman. The other, you know, helps run a business around here. I've got a team of guys that are helping out with various aspects, but we, and they, some people hate that I use we because I'm the one doing the walking, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're a team. We've got a webpage set up, www.haulacrossthecountry.com, and it's got a link tree to all of the social media on it. There is an Instagram page. There is a TikTok. I don't have any idea how to use TikTok. So I've got about a 10-day, like once I leave work tomorrow, I've got 10 days to learn how to TikTok. There is also a YouTube channel. The goal is at the end of each day, before I kind of hit the hay and get camp set up, to kind of give a wrap up for the day. You know, any type of any conversations I have with people along the way, I want to document as much as possible. You know, if I get a chance to talk with somebody who, you know, otherwise may not have told their story, like if I can put that out there for other people to listen to, then that's part of the goal. But there's really not a way to not follow along. There is also a Haul Across the Country Facebook page. I, however, have not uploaded much to that as I am in Facebook jail for about a week or 2 weeks more. Apparently you can't talk about Brazilian jiu-jitsu with your friends that also grapple without being accused of inciting violence. So I tagged a couple friends and said, I can't wait to come back from the walk and choke them, and I'm inciting violence. I was like, this is Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You have to choke people. So once that's over, there will literally be a way for everyone to kind of keep track of this. And if I ever figure out how to do the TikTok dances, maybe I'll do a TikTok dance. The idea is for the smaller content, it'll go to TikTok and then share it to Instagram and things like that. Oh. But there will be a way for everyone to follow along.
That is awesome. That's really cool, Joe. We'll be sure to, you know, when we publish the podcast and, you know, and on YouTube, we'll be sure to include those links into the link tree and some of those specific social media platforms, for our audience to be able to follow along with your journey as well. And as we, you know, are kind of wrapping up, the podcast as well, I know you said that you had mentioned the, you know, your fundraising for the Dayton Children's Hospital. Can listeners go to your website to donate to them, or do you have a link directly to the Dayton Children's Hospital, or where do they go in order to make donations if they want to do that?
When you go to our website, haulacrossthecountry.com, you click the drop down to donate. It gives you the option to donate straight to that fundraiser there. There are also options if people want to donate as far as supplies and things to help get through the journey for me. It's not a situation where I'm staying in hotels every night. The plan is to camp as much as possible. And anything I've got left over at the end, I'm donating right back to run a mile for Jackson. Mm-hmm. Cause that was one thing my cousin was like, well, you don't want people to think they're paying for your vacation. And I was like, well, I'm for lack of a better term, I'm going to be homeless for the next 6 months. Like, you know, but I get it. You know, I don't want people to feel like they're paying for me to kick my feet up in a hotel every night.
I don't know if that's exactly how I would think of it, but I understand after you walk all day, then you get to, you're spoiling yourself by picking your feet up at night.
Right. So there are options there if people want to, donate to me as well. I've put, my money back. We've also got t-shirts for sale. The proceeds from the t-shirts go to the fundraising. Again, ultimately, whatever goes to the fundraising for me is still going to go back to run a mile for Jackson at the end of everything. But the real big focus is to raising the money for Dayton Children's. If we get to $50,000, and I don't know where they're at currently. I know they were at $26,000 from last year's fundraiser. I don't think they've got the final numbers on this year yet. But if they get to $50,000, there's a business group here in Dayton that's going to match their donation to Children's Hospital. So we've got a chance to help raise $100,000 or more for behavioral health at Children's Hospital, which will give, the kids and their parents resources in dealing with the stuff that is affecting way more kids and people in general than we want to acknowledge. So
yeah, that is cool. That is awesome. Well, thank you, Joe, for, joining the Hometown Highlights podcast. And really cool to be able to share your story. Again, as mentioned, we will for sure include the link to the website and those social media platforms. Just awesome seeing you use your platform, and your idea at this point is inspiring. The idea is inspiring. And I look forward to kind of following you along through the journey as well.
Thank you. And I appreciate you guys having me. I know a lot of the guests you guys normally have are a little bit closer to your area. So it was kind of cool to have you guys, be in 2 or 3 hours away, reach out.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the chance to tell the story to more people. And if, anybody that's listening, if you're struggling, even if you don't feel like you can talk to anyone, come to the website, shoot us an email. It goes straight to me. I'll talk. I am not a licensed psychiatrist or psychologist. I guess I have to preface that, but I will listen. If you feel like you've got nobody else to talk to, message me. I'll talk with you. I'll help out in whatever way I can.
Awesome. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for using the platform for good.
Thank you.
This has been the Hometown Highlights Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation. For similar interviews, you can subscribe to the podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors at Hitchings Insurance. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to the next show.